Good evening, everybody. Yes. Welcome back. Tonight we will, God willing, begin Hilchos Kashrus. This will take us a while. We'll begin with the laws of Basar B'Chalav, Tarovos, that's mixtures, what happens when my milchik spoon falls into my fleishik pot, or the like. We'll also hopefully do topics like Bedikas Tolayim, checking for bugs, and later on, Hechsher Kalim, especially with respect to Pesach, Tvilas Kalim, ovens, stoves, Bishalakum, Pasakum, and the like. Generally speaking, we are going to try to find a balance between an analysis and not getting too technical and in-depth and the like. I think it's very boring if I just tell you the bottom line, halacha, without the background, but at the same time, try to keep it practical and not get too drawn into some of the discussions. Last year I was zocha to teach smicha students Yoredeya Hilchos Kashrus, and the truth is that those shiurim are online. So if anybody is interested in a more in-depth version of most of what we're going to say, so feel free to check that out. I wasn't so nervous about tonight until I saw you, since, yeah, well, you're married to the world's expert in Hilchos Kashrus, so I might get in trouble. Trust what your husband says if it contradicts what I said. So the laws of Kashrus, if you look in the Rambam, are in the Sefer of Kedusha, of holiness. And holiness is expressed in many ways. But one way, of course, is in terms of what we eat. That we don't just eat anything, we think about what we eat, and eating that which is right can bring a person to Kedusha. This is an idea that I would like to expand upon another time, perhaps some of the ideas, the machshav ideas behind Kashrus. But tonight I think we will get down to business, and we're going to begin with an introduction to Basar B'Chalav. So because it's an introduction, we're going to talk about things a little generally, not immediately in a practical way, and we'll get to some practical applications later on today and next week, God willing. So, interestingly enough, as you all probably know, the Torah does not actually say you may not eat milk and meat, you may not eat basar b'chalav. What the Torah does say on three different occasions is lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. You may not cook a gedi, called a goat, with its mother's or in its mother's milk. So how do you know that you can't actually eat it? Maybe I simply can't cook milk and meat. For now, we'll assume that gedi is just an example of meat. We'll elaborate upon that shortly. So how do I know you can't eat basar b'chalav? If the Torah doesn't say it, how do you know you can't eat it? So there are actually a number of answers to this in the Gemara. The most famous is from Kuf Tesvav Amud Beis, Debei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, Lo Tevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo Shlosha Pa'amim. The Torah says three times you may not cook milk and meat. Echad L'Isser Achila, V'Echad L'Isser Hana, V'Echad L'Isser Bishel. To teach me that three things are prohibited. Number one, eating, that's what we all know. Milk cooked with meat may not be eaten. Not only can't you eat it, but you may not cook it. This is sui generis. This is very unusual. There's no other case in the laws of Kashrus where there's an iser bishel. So when it comes to other forms of non-kosher food, let's say non-kosher meat, nevela, so there's no iser to cook it. For example, if I wish to give my dog non-kosher food, so I could cook it. My first grade Hebrew teacher, Mara Devora, Debbie Kipperman, Allah Shalom, so she told me she was once, this is a while back, she was in Safeway, and this was before Pesach. She didn't know if there's any kosher for Pesach dog food. She had a dog, so she figured she'd just give her dog meat, cook meat for it. What a treat. But she wasn't going to buy kosher meat. Kosher meat cost a fortune. So she went, and she went to Safeway, and she bought the cheapest meat she could find in for her dog. And who, lo and behold, is behind her in line? The rabbi. Oh, it's for my dog. So we'll talk about Maris Ayin later. That actually comes up, whether that was okay or not, in terms of Maris Ayin. But in terms of Hilchos Kashrus, it is certainly okay. There's no problem buying non-kosher meat, feeding it to your dog. When we talk about ovens, we'll talk about whether you could cook it in your oven or not. But let's say you kept it in a covered aluminum pan. You could cook it in your oven, feed it to your dog, no problem. No problem to cook non-kosher food, but not basar b'challah. Basar b'challah is the exception. Not only can't you eat it, you can't cook meat together with milk. Not only that, but you may not benefit from it. Again, here too, it is different than most machalos asuros. Like we said, when it comes to non-kosher meat, meat from Trafeway, so you can feed it to your dog. I'm benefiting from it, no problem. You could benefit from it, you just can't eat it. Not basar b'challah. So you could not actually buy basar b'challah dog food. You have to check. If you're buying dog food that's made from meat, we'll see shortly, not chicken, but meat, you have to make sure there's no milk and meat in it. That could happen. It's not crazy. So check the ingredients of dog food before you buy it. Even during the whole year, make sure there's no milk and meat in it. But there's no problem when it comes to other isurin, generally speaking. Pesach is another example of something that's asur b'hana, so you can't feed your dog chametz tikka dog food, just as you can't feed your dog basar b'challah dog food. But your dog food certainly need not be kosher in other respects. Yes? So that's actually quite a complex question. But the bottom line is, yes, even if the meat is non-kosher, if it's a kosher species, then basar b'challah certainly applies to it. So while there might not be basar b'challah if you cooked ham in milk, if you cooked cow's meat that simply wasn't shechted properly with milk, that is a problem of basar b'challah. And therefore, if your dog food was made from beef and was cooked together with milk, then you may not feed that to your dog. It's not particularly hard to find dog food that's okay, but again, it's something that if you do own a pet, you have to check, you have to look. Okay, so that is why it says it three times. Three times to teach me three different things: echad iser achila, echad iser bishel, echad iser hana. The Rambam, okay, now, but we still have a question, which is, what is derived from the fact that it refers to the prohibition against eating with the term lo tevashel? Why doesn't it simply say lo tochal? So if it's going to say it three times, so once say lo tevashel, once say lo tochal, and once say lo tehanu. What is derived from the fact that it refers to the iser achila with the term bishel? Again, when it says lo tevashel, one of the times at least, we say it means lo tochal, don't eat it. So the term lo tevashel, what does that mean? So we actually learn a number of important halachos for that. Number one is we learn that it is only prohibited if it's derech bishel. There is no biblical prohibition against basar b'challah if it's not cooked. So mixing together milk and meat is not, that's cold, even if they're integrated. You put them in a blender, or you do what's known as kavush. Kavush is soaking them together. Kavush is more generally translated as pickling, but it happens even without vinegar or the like. If you simply were to let meat soak in milk for 24 hours, we assume that their tastes are integrated, their commingling of tastes. We'll get back to that later. So you have meat and milk mixed together, no iser d'oraisa. Why? Because they weren't cooked. It's only if they're cooked together, derech bishel asra Torah. Now, you might say, well, what difference does it make? So it's asra midrabanan. We all know midrabanan, you can't have cold milk and cold meat together. So one possible difference as we'll see shortly, is that there's no Isser Hana'ah when it comes to Basar B'chalav Dirabanan. That will apply to things like chicken and milk, as we'll see shortly. This is also a practical question. So if you had dog food made out of chicken with milk, that would be okay to feed your dog. Just not meat and milk, because it's only when it's an Isser Deraisa. Or, for example, when it comes to selling. There's a general question about selling non-kosher food, but this is a question that my grandfather had. He had a kosher store, and there would be non-Jews that would come in, and they would ask for a deli and cheese sandwich. Deli was kosher, cheese was kosher. Could you put the cheese on the deli and give them the sandwich? Well, if that was Basar B'chalav D'oraisa, the answer is you couldn't. You can't sell it. That would be Hana. But because it's not, you can. There might be a different issue you have to consider. Maybe we'll talk about it. Selling non-kosher things in general. But that would be no problem with Basar B'chalav. You'd be surprised. I think on three different occasions, certainly two, I've been asked the question, can you work at McDonald's? Can a Jew work at McDonald's? Seemingly not, because then it's actually being cooked together. We'll talk about maybe at the end of today's shiur if that is so simple. So that's halacha number one. From the fact that it uses the words lo tevashel, we learn that at least on a Torah level, there's only a prohibition when there's bishul. And if it's not cooked together, even if the tastes are merged, there's no Isser D'oraisa. Another halacha we derive from this, that's a kula, if you will. Kula is there's no Isser D'oraisa if they're not cooked together. We also derive a chumrah. Since it does not say, don't eat it, but it only says, lo tevashel, so we see that the Isser Achila applies even shelo kederach hana'asan, even shelo kederach achila. Now what does that mean? For most Isurim, at least on a D'oraisa level, if you eat something in an unusual way, like when it's very hot, or you mix into it something that makes it taste very bad, there is no Isser D'oraisa. We're going to get back to that halacha when we talk about whether you need kosher vitamins or kosher medicines. But certainly on a D'oraisa level, there is no problem, usually, if something has something awful mixed into it so it tastes bad. Or it's shelo kederach achila. Swallowing the pill is probably shelo kederach achila. It's not the normal way to eat things, to swallow it whole or to swallow it in a capsule. But that doesn't apply to Basar B'chalav because the Torah didn't say don't eat it. The Torah said lo tevashel. Since it did not formulate the prohibition in terms of eating, so even if you eat it shelo kederach achila or shelo kederach hana, it is actually asur. So again, the practical examples of that we'll talk about later when we discuss whether you need a hechsher or not, not a simple question, on things like vitamins and medicine, or is there a difference? So that is how we derive the Isser Achila according to one opinion. The Rambam actually makes up his own source, maybe there's an earlier place for it, but makes up more or less his own source for the prohibition against eating Basar B'chalav. He says the following. Lo shasa kakasav melasar ha'achila, ela mipnei she'asar ha'bishol. Kelomar, v'afilu bishulo asar, v'ein sarach lomar achilasam. Why does the Torah say lo tevashel? To teach me even bishul's asar, and kol shekein, certainly, achila's asar. If the Torah says lo tevashel gedi b'chalei v'imo, you can't even cook milk and meat, so certainly, kal v'chomer, you will not be able to eat milk and meat. So that's how we know that eating is asr. Because if cooking is asr, kol shekein, certainly eating is asr. And it almost sounds like the Rambam, from the Rambam. This is a possibility raised by the Kesef Mishnah and others, that this is a gzeira d'oraisa. This is, what do I mean a gzeira d'oraisa? We know that there are many gzeiros d'rabbanan. What's a gzeira? Gzeira is, the Torah says, let's give an example from Basar B'chalav. The Torah says you can't cook meat with milk. Meat does not include poultry. But gzeira atu, meat, they prohibited, the Chachamim prohibited poultry. Right? There's no Isser D'oraisa to cook chicken with milk. But because, let's assume for a moment, the reason is because chicken can sometimes be confused with meat. Just the other day, I had spaghetti and meatballs for supper. And I said, these are delicious, spaghetti and meatballs. And then I was told, these aren't actually meatballs, they're chicken balls, or turkey balls, or something like that, right? So, I know that's not a mistake you would make. But anyhow, the point is, chicken, meat, they could be confused a little bit, so they prohibited chicken cooked with milk, gzeira, atu, meat cooked with milk. That's a gzeira. Most gzeiros are midrabanan, of course. However, the Rambam might be saying that basar b'chalav, bishul basar b'chalav, is a gzeira d'oraisa atu achilas basar b'chalav. Eating basar b'chalav is so bad that the Torah not only prohibited eating basar b'chalav, but even cooking basar b'chalav. Now, what difference does it make that that is the source? So here's a very fascinating question. I'll give you two versions of this question. One version of the question, this is a funnier version. So in Eretz Yisrael, every so often people like to riot. And one of the things that people like to do when they riot is to burn the dumpsters. Now, why they would like to do this, not quite sure, but it sends a message, gets the police to come, gets you on the newspaper. Okay, so the question they ask the Rabbanim is, are we allowed to burn the dumpsters? Hello, the dumpsters are filled with milk and meat. So if you light the dumpsters on fire, bishul basar b'chalav. Now, I would have said it's aser for a different reason, but what about basar b'chalav? Because maybe you'll say it should be aser. Torah says you're not allowed to cook meat and milk. Or maybe you'll say it's mutter, because my purpose isn't to cook it for the sake of eating. Maybe what the Rambam is telling us is that the Torah prohibits cooking meat with milk for the purpose of eating. So if you have no intention to ever eat it, it's garbage already, it should be okay. Along similar lines, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav's father, since we're in a shul that's known as Yeshivas Rabbi, the shul or the school of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, so we'll mention his name, he was asked the question, what about doing chemical experimentation with no intention to eat it, with basar and chalav mixed together? Or, here's a more practical version of this question, I don't know if you have ever been to the Sreifas Chametz in Eretz Yisrael. This sort of happens here in Washington Heights when everybody burns their chametz in the same place. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's like that times 100. Near my grandparents' house, they lived in Netanya, so there was a place where everybody in the neighborhood would burn their chametz, and it would be a gigantic fire. You had these little kids like throwing in like sticks and newspapers and, you know, by the time they build the next bonfire, Lag BaOmer, it was still smoldering. You could still smell the acrid smell of the burning plastic because it was like 80% plastic. So people like show up at this giant bonfire and they throw in all their chametz, whatever they have left in the house. So people are throwing in cheese danishes and cheese berekas and meat berekas and basar and chalav. Is that okay? So they asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky this question. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, Nachon lihizaher, better not to, don't burn, but others. With Asher Weiss, for example, in his Haggadah, he says, no, he thinks it's okay. Ein iser bishul. Why? Because when the bishul has nothing to do with achila, it's not aser. Because the Torah prohibited bishul basar b'chalav atu achilas basar b'chalav, or at least bishul for the purposes of achila. When it's bishul for the purpose of destruction, whether in your protests, or to burn the chametz, or for some other reason, like a chemical test, it would be okay. So, if you learn like the Rambam, this might be okay. An interesting nafkamina, which is, in fact, a machlokas haposkim. So, before we go on, let's summarize. Oh, yes, question. Sure. Ah! Wow, what a good question. I was not going to answer that question tonight, but since you asked, it's hard to resist. The Gemara discusses this in the question of Yesh Eim LaMikra V'Yesh Eim LaMesores, which is, we know that we received from Moshe, from Hashem, the text of the Torah, also the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, the pronunciation of the Torah, Lo Tevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo, and not B'Chelev Imo. But still there's a question, which one we follow when it comes to drasha. So the Gemara asks your question. And the Gemara proves from here, initially, that we follow the pronunciation. And since the pronunciation is bechalev imo, that's correct. If someone was learning from the Torah, lo tevashel gedi bechalev imo, so you would correct them. You would say bechalev imo, But that's one conclusion. Then the Gemara says, well, no, I could actually prove it mineu bei, from the text of the Torah. Why? Because it uses the term lo tivashel. And if you cooked, now this is the way Rashi reads the Gemara, Tosis reads it differently, but the way Rashi reads it, if it was chelev, which is fat, mixed with basar, that wouldn't be bishel, that would be tzli, that would be roasting. From the fact that it uses the word lo tivashel, I know it must be milk and meat. It's a great question. See, if you ask good questions, then I get to talk about the irrelevant things. Okay, so let's summarize what we said so far. Don't worry, we had plenty of irrelevant things anyway. Summarize. The pasuk says, Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo, three times. From here we derive A, iser achila, the prohibition against eating. B, iser bishel, the prohibition against cooking. C, iser hana, the prohibition against any form of benefit. And when we're dealing with basar b'chalav de'oraisa, like meat and milk, we have to be concerned with all three of these things. But it's only prohibited mid'oraisa when there's bishul. So if you had cold milk with cold meat that wasn't cooked together, there'd be no issur de'oraisa, only an issur d'rabbanan. Practical application, since it's only issur d'rabbanan, there's no issur hana. You could give it to a dog. You could give it to a non-Jew, as opposed to when there's bishul. We saw the Rambam has an alternative reading that when the Torah said bishul is aser, even bishul, certainly achila, certainly eating, perhaps an application of that is, according to the Rambam, if it's not cooking for the sake of eating, then there might not actually be a case in iser of bishul, and one interesting application of that might be sreifas chametz. Okay, now, practically speaking, I think, halach l'maaseh, we would probably recommend against trying intentionally cooking milk with meat, even if it's not for the purpose of eating. Okay, now, another point. So it says, lo tevashel gedi. So what is included in gedi? All animals, all types of meat. So we already alluded to the bottom line halacha, but the truth is it's not simple. There are actually three opinions in the Tanaim, at least according to Tosfos and Rashi. One opinion is Rabbi Akiva, that chaya and oaf are not asar midoraisa. The only things that are asar midoraisa is basar behema. So what would that mean? That would mean a cow, it would mean sheep, it would mean goats. It wouldn't mean camels, because camels aren't kosher anyway on a deraisa level. Can't eat it anyway, but wouldn't include a camel. That gets into some other interesting questions. It wouldn't include, though, oaf, like chicken or turkey. It wouldn't include chaya, like deer, even kosher deer. It's only things that are like a gedi, namely basar, behema, kshira. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, oaf is not asar midoraisa, but chaya, wild animals, are asar midoraisa. That's similar to basar, that's like a chaya, that's similar enough to a gedi. He has a derivation for it. And therefore, venison with milk would be asar midoraisa. And according to the Chachamim, even poultry, even chicken would be asar midoraisa. How do we paskin? So most Rishonim paskin that it's only basar behema and not basar chaya and not basar oaf. Those are only asar midrabanan. So there's no isar deoraisa except if the meat is cow or sheep or goat. Now, what difference does it make if it's deraisa or not? So one application is hana. Another nafkamina is bishul. Again, there's no iser deraisa of bishul or hana if it's not deraisa. And another fascinating application, which we'll discuss right now, is maris ayin. But first, your question. Yes. Oh, what a good question. We almost always follow the Chachamim. So why do we follow Rabbi Akiva in this case? It's a good question. It's because the Gemara is so same like the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. But you're right. Usually it seems to be violating the rules. Halachas Rabbi Akiva mechavero, not mechaverav. And the Rishonim show how the Gemara seems to take this for granted, and you are correct that it is unusual. Usually we will follow the Tanakh HaKana and HaChamim. It happens to be that the Rush, since you brought it up, learns that the Rif thinks that the Rabbanan don't argue with Rabbi Akiva, and one of the motivations for that would be perhaps to answer your question. So it could be that the Rabbanan don't argue. That's the view of the Rush and the Rif. According to the Rif, yeah. If you're not going to learn like the Rif, then what's the basis? It's because the Gemara is so same like Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara takes for granted Rabbi Akiva's position is correct, and this would be an unusual case, an exception, where we don't follow the Chachamim. The Chachamim actually agree with Rabbi Akiva. The Chachamim's position isn't so clear, is the answer, what they hold. So there's a machlokas between the Rif versus Tosfos, what the Chachamim hold. Yeah. Yes, that's one of the reasons for the middle view why you would include Chaya but exclude Oph. Her question was, another reason why we would know that Oph is excluded is because it says Bechalev Imo. There's no way to have Chalev Imo for a bird because birds don't produce milk. So that is the logic behind Rav Yossi Aglili, who says Chaya is Aser Midoraisa because Chayos do produce milk as opposed to Oph, which does not. Correct. Okay. So I mentioned before that an interesting nafka mina to this is Maris Ayin. Now, I'm going to therefore go on a little digression and talk about Maris Ayin for two reasons. One is because it's in this context that the Shulchan Aruch talks about Maris Ayin. And B, the halachos of Maris Ayin are very relevant. They come up all the time, especially in Hilchos Kashrus. And this is an opportunity to generally discuss Maris Ayin, and then we'll specifically apply it to Basar B'Chalav, but hopefully we'll have a general understanding of when there's a prohibition against Maris Ayin. So first, a brief introduction to the laws of Maris Ayin. There are actually two reasons for Maris Ayin, or two bases to prohibit what we colloquially call Maris Ayin. The first is Chshad. Chshad means being suspect. The Pasuk says, Vayisem Nikiyim Me Hashem Umi Yisrael. That's in the Tanai of Bnei Gad Bnei Ruvain. The Gemara understands that means you shall be pure or innocent, clean, literally, in the eyes of God and Israel. So obviously we have to be innocent in the eyes of God, meaning to say not violate the law. We also have to be innocent in the eyes of Yisrael, meaning to say that I can't do something that will cause other people to suspect me of doing the wrong thing. I can't do things that look suspicious. And there are all sorts of applications of this. One example in the Gemara is that you cannot hang up wet laundry on Shabbos. Let's say I did my laundry before Shabbos, but I forgot to, left it in the washing machine, forgot to hang it up. So can I dry that? Answer is no. People might think that I did laundry on Shabbos. The Gemara, the Mishnah even says, let's say I'm walking along, it's a nice bright sunny day, and I fall into the river, or I need to cross the river to get home or to get to my Rebbe or something like that. So I come home, my clothing are all wet. Am I allowed to hang them up? Answer, no. Why? Chshad, people might think I laundered these clothing on Shabbos. Okay? So that's the first example. There are lots of examples. You know, Gabbai Tzedakah shouldn't put the Tzedakah money that he's collecting in his pocket. People might think he's pocketing it. All sorts of examples. You can't do things that will make people think you're a Rasha. That's the first category of Maris Ayin, but this is technically called Chshad. The second category is that I can't do things that will cause people to derive the wrong halacha. They're not going to think I'm a Rasha. They're not going to think I'm violating the halacha. No one's going to think, for example, let's take the first example. Probably no one's going to think you're allowed to do laundry on Shabbos if they see me hanging up my laundry on Shabbos. What will they think? They'll think that I'm a Rasha, I'm on a halal Shabbos, I do my laundry on Shabbos, right? But sometimes you'll have a situation where what I'm doing is okay, but people won't understand it's okay. Either they won't understand the circumstances that I'm doing it, or they won't understand the law and they'll make some type of incorrect extrapolation. and they will derive the wrong halacha from my actions. That's called maris ayin. So sometimes both of these applications are applicable. Sometimes only one. Sometimes they won't think I'm doing the wrong thing, but they'll extrapolate that something that's actually usur is permitted. Sometimes they'll only be chshad. Sometimes there will be both. So we're going to refer to both of these categories. Yeah, you had a question. So that's a very good question. So it's a little beyond the scope of tonight's lecture, but I'll briefly address it since you brought it up. In that case, because the prohibition is actually stated in the Gemara, many poskim assume that it's a low plug. A low plug means that it's usur, even in cases where the concern isn't relevant, because it's a across-the-board prohibition. Many Isurei Derabanan are what's known as this low plug. Low plug means that it's across-the-board restriction, and even though certain cases the concern isn't relevant, so let's take your example. It's raining outside. Nobody's going to think that I laundered this. I come in from outside, my shirt's all wet, I want to hang up my shirt. So nobody's going to think that I laundered the shirt, because the much more plausible explanation as to what happened is that simply I got rained on, and that's why I want to hang it up. So, generally speaking, we are nevertheless machmir. However, in cases where it is absolutely clear from the circumstances that I did not do the iser, there are poskim that are makel. So I'll give you an example. Some poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, also Rav Adi Yosef, are lenient if it's something that's a dry, clean-only garment. Let's say I come home, it's raining outside, so I'm wearing what I'm wearing now, right? And my jacket gets wet and my shirt gets wet. So my shirt is something that wash at home. So therefore, I can't hang it up, even though it's raining outside and everybody's going to realize, because at least there, conceivably, it could be shad. Right? But when it comes to my dry clean only jacket, everybody knows nobody washes jackets at home. And therefore, it's totally clear that this is because of the rain and it was not laundered, because you can't even launder it at home because it's dry clean only. So then there are poskim that are makel. I'll just cite you, if I can find it. Pashut, this is Rav Moshe writing, Pashut shebegadim she'ein darkan l'chabsam mutter l'shtoach kishenaflu b'mayim o shenaflu alav harbe gishamim. Likewise, the Mishnah Brura is makel under the following circumstances. The Mishnah Brura, that was Igros Moshe Chela Kesim and Yudches. The Mishnah Brura is Shin Aleph Sif Katan Kuf Samech Dalid. He writes, Uvigadim hamilafefin bahem tinokos, those are diapers, cloth diapers, mutter l'shatchan beveso, shiis nagvu, vafilu b'chama b'chatzer, dekevan diesha leim gam tzoas hakatan v'imken muchach shelo kimson. So before they had disposable diapers, so you had to do something with your dirty diapers, so you'll have to hang them up. So he says, well, since there's tzoa, there's feces on it, it's clear that they weren't laundered, so it's okay to hang them up. What about if they're just wet? So then he says, "V'efshar afilu ein aleihem tzawa im lo nashra kulan b'hamei raglayim da kol yodin shederech hatinokos lahashtin." Since this is a diaper, and everybody knows that babies dirty their diapers, so therefore he's probably willing to be mako. So if it's totally clear from the circumstances that these were not laundered, two examples, one is it's a diaper, two is it's dry clean only, so then many poskim are makel. However, if it's not absolutely clear, then the poskim seem to be machmir. For example, the previous Mishnah Brura writes the following. Ayin magen Avram, shemitzadeh lomar didafka, shenashra b'mayim, avalem naflu mayim, watim aleim, Mutter l'shatchan delek l'meima sheyachshidu shekavsan. What if they're just slightly wet? So the Magen Avraham says it's okay, because people won't think they'll be laundered. Aval har be'achronim sover de'ein l'chalek b'zeh, hatam de'lo chalkul chachamim v'tachanasan, because of a low plug. So the truth is that this is an unclear matter. Because what you see here is that the Mishnah Berurah is saying sometimes it's a low plug, and sometimes it's not. Where you draw the line is not so clear. But it seems to me, to answer your question, is that when it's absolutely clear that this was not laundered, for example, the dry cleaning case, or the baby's dirty diaper case, so then it's okay to hang them. And we don't say low plug. But when it's conceivable that these were laundered, like the case of the shirt, so then you should be machmir. So what does that mean? If I come home, in the example that I gave, my jacket's wet, my shirt's wet, what could I do? So the shirt, obviously I could take it off, just throw it in the laundry, and I shouldn't hang it up to dry. The jacket, dry clean only, I could hang it up to dry. Because in one case it's conceivable that it might have been laundered, and that would lead to chshad. In the other case, it's inconceivable. And basically, in these types of questions, you have to paskin using those general guidelines. If it's absolutely inconceivable that this was laundered or that the case of the chshad is relevant, then it's going to be okay. Now, there are a lot of questions relating to Marasayan, I see. So let me teach the halachos of Marasayan, and then we'll take the questions. Maybe I'll answer them, or at the very least, I'll be able to better address them. Okay, so again, what our introduction told us is that there's actually two categories of Maris Ayin. Number one is Chshad. Number two is Maris Ayin. Again, Chshad, they'll suspect me of doing the wrong thing. Number two is they'll derive the incorrect halacha from my actions. Okay, so what does that have to do with Basar B'chalav? Says the Ramah, fascinating halacha. The Ramah writes that let's say I have parev milk. Now, we all think parev milk, that's a modern-day invention. You know, the rich whip and rice milk and soy milk and vanilla milk and all sorts of... So the truth is that this isn't so new. They had, in the times of the Ramah, chalav shkedim, almond milk. And the Ramah writes the following. If I'm having almond milk with chicken, so that's no problem. But if I'm having almond milk with meat, then I should leave some almond shells around. Why? Because that will tell everybody that this is almond milk. And it won't be a problem of Maris Ayin. But the implication is that if I have almond milk with meat without the shells, then it's a problem. This is what the Rambam writes. V'nagu lasos chalav mishkedim, Uminichim ba basar of, hoil ve'eno rak midirabanan. Aval basar behema, yesh la niach etzel achalav shkedim, mishamaris ha'ayin. So that's the psak of the Ramah. Now, what does it sound like the Ramah is telling us? It sounds like the Ramah is saying that for an iser de'oraisa, there's maris ha'ayin, and for an iser de'rabanan, there's no maris ha'ayin. So, basar of v'chalav is an iser de'oraisa or de'rabanan. Rabbanan. So I don't need the almond shells. There's no problem with Maris Ayin. But when it comes to Basar Behema, that's an Issa Deraisa, so then I do need the almond shells, right? In the case that we talked about hanging up the clothing, that's an Issa Deraisa. Laundering your clothing on Shabbos is Asher Deraisa. That's when we apply Maris Ayin. But if it's an Issa Rabbanan, it sounds like the Ramah is saying there's no Maris Ayin on an Issa Rabbanan. That's the opinion, apparent opinion of the Ramah. Asks the Shach. Now, we're going to get used to the great poskim of Yaradeya. So we have the Mechaber, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, Rav Moshe, Isserlis, the Ramah. He wrote the Hagos on the Shulchan Aruch that Ashkenazim generally follow. And I have two new big names for you, the Shach and the Taz. Shach stands for the Sifsei Kohen, Taz stands for Turei Zav. Those are the Nosei Kalim, commentaries on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch. Here's the Shulchan Aruch. So here is the Mechaber, the Ramah is in the Rashi script, Taz on the inside margin, Shach on the outside margin. Okay, we're going to come to know and love them. Now, the Shach says the Ramah is absolutely wrong. I can tell you that there are places where we find that there's maris ayin even for isurim derabanan. And after all, why should it make a difference? So they think I violated Nisar derabanan, or they're going to come to violate Nisar derabanan. That should also be wrong. Therefore, the Shach disagrees with the Ramah. Whether you have meat with almond milk or chicken with almond milk, you have to put the shells there. You have to make it clear. A modern day application of the shells would be the carton. When non-dairy creamer first emerged, all the kashrus agencies went ahead and said, you have to have the box there. So even if you're having a fancy, elegant meal, they're having a banquet at the Ritz-Carlton, $280 a plate. And of course, when they serve coffee at the end of the meal, it's going to be with a silver, I don't know what you call it, coffee pourer, coffee pot, and china and the like. So when they pour the milk, they want to pour the milk from a nice little silver milk pourer. Nope, absolutely not. You have to use that cardboard carton that says non-dairy creamer. Why? Because maris ayin, just like the Ramah says, you need the scraps from the almonds, so too, we need the carton. Now, it is possible, many poskim say, and we're going to get to this shortly, that maybe nowadays you don't need that anymore. Why? Nowadays, non-dairy creamer is such a well-known product. Everybody knows about it, that there's no maris ayin anymore. Nobody's going to think this is milk. The two concerns aren't relevant. What were the two concerns? Somebody's going to think that I'm an avaryan because I'm having basar b'chalav. No. Come on. Everybody knows what this is. And nobody's going to think, I see from here it's mutter to have basar b'chalav. They'll know what it is. And here, especially, it's not so much of an issue because you're not even having them together, right? Usually, by the time you have milk, whether it's part of ice cream or non-dairy creamer, the meal's already over. Might be more of a problem with these, kosher cheeseburgers with either fake meat or fake milk. So we'll talk about that. There, some poskim say you still should have some type of hecker, either the box or put it on the menu that, you know, the cheese in this cheeseburger is not cheese, or the meat in this cheeseburger isn't meat. Okay, so that's the Shach and Ramah. To review, the Shach says whether it's chicken with almond milk, whether it's meat with almond milk, you need the hecker. You need the almond shells to make it clear, so there's no maris ayin. The Ramah says only de'oraisa, meat, not chicken. So how do we save the Ramah from the Shach's question? You always have to save the Ramah, right? All right, two possibilities. One is the Nachlas Tzvi. The Nachlas Tzvi says that the Ramah means b'chadrei chadarim. Here he's introducing us to another very important halacha of maris ayin. The halacha when it comes to maris ayin is that maris ayin is asur not just in a place where I'm doing a visible act and therefore there's a concern that people will think I'm a rasha or that they would derive the incorrect halacha, but even chadrei chadarim, a room within a room, still, there is a prohibition against maris ayin. So to take our example before, hanging the dry clothing. So I go ahead, I live all alone, nobody's with me this Shabbos, I come in, my shirt's wet. I go ahead, I check, the doors are closed, the windows are drawn, nobody's looking, my roommate's out for lunch. I now want to hang up my shirt to dry? No. Even chadrei chadarim is aser. Well, the Ramah says, when do we say chadrei chadarim is aser? For nisar deraisa, not a nisar derabanan. So when the Ramah says you don't need the almonds when you're eating chicken with almond milk, that means nobody's looking. If it's public, it's aser either way. If it's private, so then it's okay. So then what would come out, according to the Ramah, is maris ayin and a nisar deraisa applies both when I'm in public and in private. Maris ayin for nisar derabanan applies only when I'm in public, not when I'm in private. Rav Moshe Feinstein gives another answer for the Ramah. He says that the only time there's maris ayin for nisar derabanan is in Hilchos Shabbos. Why? Beyond tonight's discussion, but we're much more machmir about Hilchos Shabbos and even maris ayin in Hilchos Shabbos than other things. Someone who's mechalel Shabbos for nisar derabanan is still begeder in mechalel Shabbos and treated much more severely. So That's the resolution of Rav Moshe. Now, there is a third opinion here. I guess we could call it a fourth opinion if you want. Opinion number one is the Shach. Shach says that, well, I guess we'll call it three. Shach says you can't have the almond milk with chicken or with meat. Opinion two is the Ramah, as explained by the Nachlas Tzvi. You can have chicken with almond milk in private, but in public, neither with almond milk, not with chicken nor meat. And then we have Rav Moshe that understands Ramah Kipshuto, whether public, whether private, you could always, there's no Maris Ayin for Nisar Drabanan except for Shabbos. There's a third opinion, a fourth opinion, the Pri Chadash. Pri Chadash writes that there's no such thing as Maris Ayin except for the cases that the Gemara prohibits because of Maris Ayin, or the Mishnah. So the Gemara prohibited hanging up wet clothing, so hanging up wet clothing is usher because of Maris Ayin. The Gemara didn't say anything about having almond milk with meat, so therefore, it's okay. That is the opinion of the Pri Chadash. Now, if we followed the Pri Chadash, then there would be very rare cases of Maris Ayin, because any time the Gemara didn't say this is usher because of Maris Ayin, it would actually be mutter. Give you an example. The Poskim asks the following question. Is a woman allowed to wear a shetel? Why not? So one reason that's given is because Maris Ayin, people will think it's a real hair. So some say, give me a break. Everybody could tell it's a shetel. So others answer, no, based off of the Pri Chadash, that Maris Ayin only applies things that are prohibited in the Gemara, and this isn't prohibited in the Gemara, nor is it similar. Rav Moshe actually gives both answers. But generally speaking, we don't follow the Pri Chadash, though sometimes it's a sniff. What does a sniff mean, by the way? Sniff means, and this is something also we're going to learn as we go through Hilchos Kashrus, that something on its own, we don't rely on it, but if there's other tzadim l'hakel, other reasons for leniency, and we might not rely on those either, but we'll combine them. Now, you'll say 0 plus 0 plus 0 doesn't equal 1. Okay, but a half plus a half plus a half equals 1.5. So sometimes an opinion that we reject is a 0, and therefore it doesn't make a difference. It's what's known as a shita d'chuya. It's out of the question. And sometimes an opinion that we reject is a half. So we'll throw it in when there are other factors. And this is what makes Paskening Shaila so fun or complicated. Now, I know we're getting very confused. This is all sorts of confusing things, but let's talk about some very practical questions when it comes to Maris Ayin. And since it's a kashrus class, so we'll give a kashrus example. So here's a good question. What is the halacha? Of I'm driving to my friend's wedding in Cleveland. Long drive. 6 hours, 8 hours, I don't remember. So I'm getting very tired, and I pull off at a rest stop. And in this rest stop, I want some coffee. But all there is McDonald's. So am I allowed to go buy coffee at the McDonald's? Okay, well, our first question, can I buy coffee at McDonald's? Is it the coffee kosher? So, let's think about it. Is coffee plain, unflavored kosher? Yes, great. Is water kosher? I'm not in New York, so water's kosher. We'll talk about water in New York also. But everybody agrees that the water, after you leave New York, before you get to Cleveland, that's okay. Well, what about Bishalakum? The employees in McDonald's aren't Jewish. No, it's okay. We assume that coffee is like flavored water. Water doesn't need Bishal Yisrael because it's Eino Olah Shulchan Malachim. You don't serve it it's Nechal Kamo Shuchai. It's eaten raw, and therefore coffee's okay. We'll talk about that when we talk about Bishalakum. Good. What about milk? Milk also doesn't need a hechsher, assuming you follow Rav Moshe. You don't, that even all the milk is basar, is has the halachic status of Chalav Yisrael. Milk doesn't need a hechsher. Even though in New York all the non-Chalav Yisrael milks have an OU on them, you don't actually need it. So, yeah. So, look at this. At least we got some coolas tonight. Okay, milk doesn't need a hechsher. What about sugar? Sugar's also really kosher. Good. So all my ingredients are okay. My coffee, my water, my milk, my sugar, and there's no bishul, there's no problem of bishul akum. What about the kalim? So that we'll talk about later when we talk about the Starbucks question, God willing, but probably mikra adin, the kalim are also okay, even though there's all sorts of problematic kalim going around. They might even use the same dishwasher. We'll have to explain why, but turns out that probably mikra adin, the kalim are okay. Great! So I could go in and have my cup of coffee in McDonald's. 1 second! Maris Ayan! So this post question was posed to Rav Schachter and Rav Belsky. It's a common question there, the poskim of the OU, and OU mashkichim have to go on long drives to who knows where to check factories in far out places, and they get tired along the way, so they want to go to McDonald's to get coffee. So, you know, if there's a Starbucks, of course, but, you know, a lot of times there isn't Starbucks at every rest stop. Sometimes it's just Roy Rogers or McDonald's. So, they're both Mako. What about Maris Ayan? Answer is that nobody is going to be choshesh that you're buying a cheeseburger if you go into a McDonald's at a rest stop along the highway. Nobody reasonable. Would a crazy person think so? Yes, you know, if they're tabloid newspaper photographers, you know, they might take a picture, rabbi spotted in McDonald's, right? But nobody reasonable would suspect. Now, if there's a McDonald's next to a kosher coffee shop, so obviously that's not, you know, you'd go to the kosher coffee shop, but nobody would suspect that a person going into a McDonald's along a rest stop is going to be eating a cheeseburger. Nobody reasonable. They'll think they're going to the bathroom. They'll think they're buying a Coke. They'll think they're buying a coffee. They're not going to think they're buying a cheeseburger. And therefore, there's no chshad, because they're not going to think you're a Rasha. There's no Maris Ayan, because nobody's going to see you go into the McDonald's and say, oh, McDonald's is kosher, right? So the two concerns aren't relevant. And if those two concerns aren't relevant, nobody reasonable is going to think I'm a Rasha. Nobody reasonable is going to think that this is Maris Ayan, that this is Mutter. Then it's okay. And many posts can make this point concerning many applications of Maris Ayan. For example, the Kresi Uplesi, that's Rav Yonashan Eibishitz, writes that any time it's Shchiyah Chetera, there's Lekha Misha Maris Ayan. This is usually something that's okay. Only someone who's unreasonable would suspect me of doing something Aser, it's okay. The way the Tiferes Yisrael puts it is if it's Ktsas Hochacha Litzad Ha'iser Yoser Milaheter, it's more likely to be Aser than Mutter, that's when it's Maris Ayan. And while the gedarim of this aren't so clear, the Badei HaShulchan, that's another sefer we're going to quote frequently, Reb Feivel Kohn, Shlita, he wrote a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch on Hilchos Kashrus. He thinks that the Ramah might be machmir on the Shaila, but practically speaking, everybody's going to agree that when it's only a very far-fetched concern that there will be Maris Ayan, you don't have to worry about Maris Ayan. Right? So, in each and every case, whether the issue is par of ice cream or buying food for your dog that isn't kosher but it's regular meat, all these questions we discussed before, going into a restaurant with your clients that isn't kosher, so you're not going to eat any non-kosher food. Again, I'd like to, later on when we get into the halachos of knives and bugs and the like, we'll talk about what you can and can't eat at a non-kosher restaurant exactly. But let's say all you're going to do is have water, so definitely could have water, assuming you're not in New York, at the non-kosher restaurant, right? All these cases of Maris Ayan, We have to think about it, and sometimes I agree it's not so clear, but if it's very, very far-fetched that they will either be chshad or maris ayin, then it's going to be okay. And therefore, as I said, Rav Schechter and Rav Belsky were both lenient that in the case of a mashgiach driving along the highway who needs coffee to stay awake, it's okay. Rav Schechter has another concern. We'll get to that later on. He thinks you shouldn't drink it in the McDonald's because of an Isser Shechar Akum, which he thinks applies also to coffee. We'll get to that a little later. That's not the mainstream view. But, you know, probably it is better to go drink it in the car. But going into the store, which is the concern, you know, people see you going in. They don't know what you're buying. They see you standing in line at McDonald's. They thought that would be okay. And even though, you know, it might be nice to be machmir about that, it's also better not to fall asleep while driving. So you have to be... think carefully when you're machmir, what the other options are. Okay, lots of questions. Go ahead. We'll go around the room. So it's an interesting question. I'll tell you, there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe about a slightly different question, but might be a similar point. Let's say there's a restaurant that has a questionable hechsher, but certain foods there might be okay. Certain foods aren't okay. So there Rav Moshe says you're absolutely not allowed to go to such a restaurant because Maris Ayin. Because there is a chshad. Right? People might think, so I could go to McDonald's and buy coffee, but let's say there's this kosher restaurant that's not really so kosher, but that claims to be kosher. Can I go get coffee there? No. Right? Ironically, you'd say, what do you mean? This is certainly better than McDonald's. No, McDonald's is much better. Nobody thinks McDonald's is kosher, but people do think this particular restaurant is kosher. So, in your case as well, in other words, if there is a concern for Maris Ayin, then it's Aser. So better to get your coffee at McDonald's than at a restaurant, kosher restaurant that doesn't have a good hechsher. Even though the coffee is definitely kosher there. But there's Maris Ayin just to go in there and even have a cup of water, right? If the concern is only for one or two people, and you could alleviate that by explaining to them everything, and there's no concern about anybody else in the world, so you could correct the problem presumably by explaining it. You just have to be confident that there's no problem with respect to the rest of the world. But if there isn't a problem with respect to the rest of the world, only these people, so then if you can't explain it to them, it would be a problem. But if you could simply educate them, then by doing that, I would think you solved the problem. Yes?
What about a restaurant that has a half share but a questionable one, but it's not necessarily, like, let's say it's a vegetarian restaurant or a vegan restaurant. It has a questionable half share, but it's not selling anything that's like meat or dairy, you know, it's just selling vegetables. Now, okay, vegetables should be checked.
So I would think that Maris Ayin still applies there. In other words, happens to be vegan restaurants people think are okay. A lot of times there's Bishul Akum problems if they're not good hechshers. People think, let's say the Indians, they're very certain Indian restaurants, they're very machmir on having any animal product whatsoever. They won't even have eggs or milk or anything. So, and they're so frum, so I could surely go there. So first of all, there's no nemanus because they aren't Jewish. Second of all, it says, anyway, it's asr because of Bishul Akum and then the Kalim are asr and the like. Even if something that's not a problem, Bishul Akum. So the answer is absolutely avoid, that's what Rav Moshe tells us, avoid any case of a restaurant with a questionable hechsher. There really is an issue of Maris Ayin and Chashad. So it's a good question. So if you think that there's an issue across the board, like and therefore the Isser applies even with Chadri Chadarim, then obviously a verbal explanation will not help. Because in the case of Chadri Chadarim, no one's looking. and still it's usher. However, in a case where there is no iser of chad v'chadarim, let's say like the tiferes in the Nachlas Tzvi because it's an iser d'rabbanan, or because you think that cases that aren't mentioned in Shas are an usher b'chad v'chadarim or the like, so then if you totally solve the problem with a verbal explanation, that should suffice. You just have to be sure that you've totally solved the problem. That's what I would think. Right, but how do you know other people don't see you? Right. So you could argue that that case is equivalent to Chadrei Chadarim, and therefore, in cases where there's still an Isser Maris Ayin v'Chadrei Chadarim, like the cases mentioned in Shas, certainly, like hanging up the clothing, it's still going to be Asr. In cases that aren't mentioned in Shas and are only in Isser Drabanan, then maybe you could be Mako in that case. How does anybody know there's non-dairy creamer in the kugel? So then it would be okay. In other words, you're the only one that knows that that's a problem. If everybody knows that there's not that, well, again, if it looks like there's milk here, it would be a problem. If it doesn't look like there's milk, it wouldn't be a problem, right? Yeah. If they're going to, if someone, I would think that even if a non-from Jew would, if one of the concerns is applicable, in other words, either they'll think, the non-from Jew will think, I don't keep the halacha. If they don't keep the halacha, that's true, but they think, they're going to think, I don't keep the halacha. Or they would extrapolate the wrong halacha, even if they don't keep it anyway, but they would still extrapolate the wrong halacha. So if both of those, if either of those concerns are relevant, then it's going to be usher, even if they aren't from. Yeah, now there's a limit to it. In other words, again, you don't have to be worried about far-fetched concerns, especially if what I'm doing is technically okay. If what I'm doing is okay, and someone who simply doesn't know the halacha extrapolates an erroneous conclusion that... Then it's something you don't have to worry about it. There's a great story, great, beautiful tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. A lady wrote him a tshuva. It's written in, he writes to her, I think, in Yiddish, which is unusual. His tshuvas are in Hebrew, but it was written to her in Yiddish because I think she didn't understand Hebrew. Anyway, a lady wrote to him. I think it's in Hebrew, though, in the Igros Moshe. A lady wrote to him that said, Rav Moshe Feinstein, I saw you driving on Shabbos. So what happened? This woman thought that you can't do malacha starting at candlelighting. And that's 18 minutes before. And Rav Moshe got into the car. He actually, in the tshuva, I don't remember exactly what it says, but he says exactly how many minutes before Shabbos I got in. And, you know, I got into the car 16 minutes before Shkia and got out of the car 13 minutes before Shkia. And what I did was absolutely correct. But she said, this is usher. Why? Because she didn't know the halacha. In other words, because of her misunderstanding of the halacha, which was that you can't violate Shabbos from the time it says on the candle and the calendar candlelighting, so she thought this was Maris Ayin. So the question is, do I have to be concerned that something that's fundamentally totally permitted is still problematic, because it's permitted to drive on Shabbos before Shkia. Still, if it causes someone to think that something's usher, or no. So the Rav Moshe says fundamentally doesn't think that Maris Ayin is relevant over there. I'm doing something mutter. It's 100% mutter. Nobody reasonable would derive the wrong halacha. Somebody who really doesn't know the halacha might come to some type of false conclusion. He doesn't think there's Maris Ayin, because if there's Maris Ayin there, then, you know, there'd be Maris Ayin about everything, right? I can't wear a wool jacket. Somebody thinks I'm wearing chutneys. I don't know. So yesh l'davar, yesh l'gvul l'davar. And again, basically the rule is, if it's not reasonable that the incorrect conclusion will be drawn, then it's okay. Again, reasonable is a tricky word, and sometimes it's hard to know. But that's the basic operating principle. Oh, so that's a good question. Answer, I believe, is no. You mean like on a rack above the bathtub? I would think that maybe it would be okay if nobody ever hung washed clothing that way. But I don't know, in our house that's where we hang. When we run out of space and the other things, then they're hanging over there and the like. So on a practical level, I think that wouldn't help. I think that it isn't unreasonable, especially in New York, you know, to hang things over the bathtub and the like, even if they're laundered. So I think that would be usser. Okay. So if it's a dry clean only raincoat, you yeah. So you shouldn't hang it up in any place that you would potentially hang it up if you washed it, is the answer.
You don't wash it
usually? No, but let's say you did wash it. Every so often, if it's dry clean only, if it's something that you would never wash.
Ever. You don't dry it and you don't wash it in a dryer.
If your raincoat got dirty, you would wash it. It's not true. My raincoat got, what? If it's dry, I would. So if it's really plastic, then there's more room for leniency, because you can't actually, it's like a poncho. Could be that there's no kvisa there anyway. If it's an actual raincoat, if it's a winter coat, winter coats, again, if it's something that you might wash, so you may not, and you do sometimes wash winter coats, it's not so common, you don't do it every week, not even every year, but every so often, winter coats and raincoats might be washed in a washing machine. So then you may not hang it in any place where it might also be hung if it was laundered. So if you don't do that, then it's going to be okay. But any place where you might hang it if it was laundered, so like I think over a bathtub, that's a problem. So don't put it any place where it might be hung, I should say, if it was laundered. So it's a tricky question. Again, my natiya is to be machmir. There I know it's a little bit of a chumra, because we hang our wet laundry on the banisters maisim v'chol yom. So I think tonight there's wet laundered clothing hanging on our banister. So I don't think it's true, but you also put washed clothing. You also put laundered clothing there. And therefore you should not hang a wet raincoat there unless it's a dry clean only coat. I understand, but here we are more machmir because it's an example that's said in the Gemara and about which we say even chadrei chadarim zasser and aneser deraisa. So any place where it might be hung, if it was washed in a washing machine, you may not put it there. And I'll leave you to decide what is a place where it might be hung. If that's everywhere, so then you're a little stuck. It's true. Throw it in the corner. Put it on top of your bookshelf. Could even be, yeah, any place. You know, you have to figure out what is a place where you might hang it if it was laundered.
Super question. So the heifer, would that work for a raincoat? Like, what if you put your rain boots on top of your clothing that's wet from outside with your raincoat?
So Rekiva Eger asks your question. This is a mamish alumdisha question. Okay, the question she wants to know is, could you use a hecker to make it clear that this raincoat was not laundered, but it got wet because of the rain? For example, you hang your rain boots on top of your raincoat so that it's clear. So it sounds like from the Ramah it should be okay. Ramah says a hecker works. If Akiva Eger tries to argue a hecker doesn't work, I think you could be makel if it's a good hecker, but I don't know if... practically speaking, you'll come up with such a good hecker. But if you had a good hekker, there's probably makom lahakel. It's a good question. That's part of Rabbi Kiviger's question. He says, like, so should a sign work? It sounds like from the Gemara that hekker doesn't work. The problem is the Ramah says it does based off of, but the Ramah learns it from the Kaskasim, but Kaskasim, he argues, isn't. It's an interesting question. Not clear. I think that Lamaisa, the Ramah, is mako with a hekker, so there could be, if you came up with a hekker, there's makom lahakel. That we're doing Basra B'chalov. That's my problem.
If you have a restaurant that had, like, a certain number, let's say, that some have hashgachos and some don't, same cups, right? So you would be walking around where you go even to somewhere that's totally reserved. So you're going into a kosher, fully hashgacha, dekadona, okay? And then you're walking to a place, but there's 700 on your way to wherever you're going. And you could have gone to any. You could have gone to kosher one, but the coffee at the other one, let's say the clean coffee, is also kosher. So let's say you walk in somewhere and someone could suspect that you're
saying that's mutter anyway.
Okay.
So I'll ask you the two questions. Would a reasonable person deduce from here that all Dunkin' Donuts coffee is kosher? Even from
if they're not so knowledgeable on coffee, because coffee is.
So if you think that that's true, then you shouldn't. If you think a reasonable person would make that error, then you shouldn't. Yeah, got to put it in a non-Dunkin' Donuts. I'm not sure I would agree that a reasonable person would make that error. And I think, practically speaking, these are tough calls. I would think that it might be that since there are kosher Dunkin' Donuts around, any reasonable person would assume you got it from the kosher one. And just because there are also non-kosher ones, it's okay. You know, I think it's okay to walk around Washington Heights with a kosher with a Dunkin' Donuts cup or bag, even though there are non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts in Washington Heights as well, certainly around here, because anyone would think that you got it from the kosher one. That would be my impression. But if it's true that a reasonable person would suspect me of eating non-kosher or that even non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts are kosher, then it would be Aser. All right. So the answer, I think, is that if you, again, if there's no kosher coffee place, you know, in the close vicinity, I think it's probably okay, because I think people would not derive the incorrect halacha. That's like the McDonald's case in the rest stop. If you're next door to, or, you know, close by a kosher coffee, you know, place that sells kosher coffee, not just kosher, but a place with a hechsher or the like, then probably you shouldn't. Because, again, would a reasonable person suspect me of doing the wrong thing or derive the incorrect halachic conclusion? What do you think? If the answer is yes, then you shouldn't. If the answer is no, it's okay. Which one is it? You have to decide. But I would think that it's probably okay. Many people, again, is there, is it perhaps a midas chasidus to be machmir about this? I think so. But I think Mikra did many people buy coffee from all sorts of places without a hechsher, non-kosher places, like non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts and the like. I think that's probably, again, where there's no kosher coffee easily available, I think there's makom lahakel. Midas chasidus to be machmir, but it's makom lahakel, and that's what many people do. Wow. All right. That's no problem. It's a very interesting question. Why? You could hang up all the laundry you want 1 minute before Shabbos. You don't have to worry about people thinking that you hung it up on Shabbos. No problem.
So, back to Kasher, does all of this only apply to kosher versus non-kosher, or say Israel or Kasher, so many, like, you have the hot training or anything like that?
If you think that Rabbanut is not kosher and you go ahead, please feel free, this could go on forever. If you think that Rabbanut is actually non-kosher, but then you shouldn't go in and buy there even things that are kosher. But if you think that Rabbanut is kosher, it's just you want to be machmir to avoid it, then I think it's okay. Think if I think Rabbanut is it's mutter for people to follow Rabbanut. Strictly speaking, it's better to get better hachsherim because the standards are higher and that's preferable. So then it would be okay, I think, to go into Rabbanut to get something that I think is okay, certainly, because what are they going to do? They're going to suspect me of eating Rabbanut? Well, I think that's technically okay anyway. It's just better to be machmir. So they'll think that I'm not a chassid. They'll think, so if that's your approach to Rabbanut, so then it would be okay. If your approach to Rabbanut is that this is mamish, not reliable, and you can't assume the food is kosher and the like, so then that would bring you back to the case of Rav Moshe, where he says that if there's a restaurant with a bad hechsher, you can't buy even kosher food there. So that would depend on what your attitude towards Rabbanut is. And obviously, different Rabbanim will tell you different things. So you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi. Hopefully that's not me. I'll tell you what I think off the record about that to find out what the what would be there. But my netiya is that that's okay. I don't, you know, for the most part, different Rabbanuts and different things, but for the most part, I think you might say Rabbanut is kosher. It's just preferable not to have, as opposed to saying it's mamish not kosher. All right. Have a good evening. Next week we'll do actually more practical and normal kashrus.